Welcome to the Hands in Motion podcast, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. Here we will discuss all things upper extremity therapy, from assessment to treatment, the latest research, the patient experience, and other topics related to the field of upper extremity rehab. Learn more and subscribe today at asht.org.
This episode of Hands in Motion is sponsored by the Indiana Hand to Shoulder Center, a private hand surgery and hand therapy practice recognized across the world for its specialization in problems and injuries of the upper extremity. The Indiana Hand to Shoulder Center is hosting a conference this May. Hand Care 2024 is geared towards the practicing clinician with a special interest in hand and upper extremity rehabilitation, with the goal of advancing the practice of hand therapy and quality of patient care. This three-day course includes lectures, research, anatomy and orthotics labs, panel discussions with therapists and surgeons, state-of-the-art exhibits, and of course, some fun. Join us May 16th through the 18th in Noblesville, Indiana. For more information and to register for the conference, visit our website at www.handcareconference.com. Welcome back to another episode of Hands in Motion. On this episode, we are joined by Dr. Brian Loeffler, an orthopedic surgeon who devotes a significant amount of his practice to treating patients who have experienced limb loss. He discusses with us the use of targeted muscle reinnervation, its indications, and how it has transformed care for patients to prevent pain and improve function. Welcome to Hands in Motion, Dr. Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. We have Dr. Loeffler with us. We're just going to jump right in. If you could tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're practicing, what you're currently doing, that would be fantastic.
Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for having me on. I'm glad to be here and share my experience with targeted muscle reinnervation, starfish procedure, taking care of amputees. As you said, I'm Dr. Brian Loeffler at Ortho Carolina in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm one of the co-founders of the Reconstructive Center for Lost Limbs here, which is our amputee clinic, where we see about 90 to 95% of our patients are actually upper extremity patients. And we hold that clinic twice monthly. We started it about 8 years ago now, just because we were taking care of so many amputees and felt like their care was a little bit disjointed, and had an idea for kind of creating a multidisciplinary center where patients could come for one-stop shop to get everything from the surgical and medical care to the prosthetic care to the therapy care to the mental health care to peer-to-peer support, and also get involved in research and things like that. So it certainly wasn't something that I thought I would be doing when I entered practice as a shoulder, elbow, and hand surgeon after all that training, but something that I've really fallen in love with. The time of the month I look forward to the most is in our amputee clinic and doing the amputee surgeries for those patients.
Can you just tell our listeners a little bit about what targeting muscle reintervention is, or do you refer to it as TMR?
We refer to it as TMR, yes. So targeted muscle reinnervation is a little bit of a mouthful there. When you're talking about management of nerves, it can be a little bit of an alphabet soup because there's a lot of different abbreviations for things. If you break it down, really what you're doing is you're taking a muscle that is there in the residual limb, and you're taking a nerve that otherwise a dead end because the muscle or the skin area that it used to activate is no longer there. And so instead of having that dead end nerve that is very sensitive, that can get physical stimulus to it that can be unpleasant, can be associated with phantom limb pain and residual limb pain, you take the end of that nerve, you freshen up the ending of it, and you put it into a smaller nerve that's going into a muscle that's alive that's in the residual limb. So you're targeting that residual limb muscle and you're re-innervating it, meaning you are giving it a new innervation or nerve input. So that's in essence what TMR stands for.
At what point do you decide a patient is appropriate for TMR?
So it's interesting. The majority of the patients are amputees in the example that I just gave, but there are cases where you have just a nerve that's been cut. The limb is still there, but again, it's a dead end nerve. If there's not a possibility to reconstruct that, meaning to do a nerve graft or a nerve repair for that, if the nerve has been a troublemaker, as we call them sometimes, where it's just continued to produce pain symptoms in a sensitive area, then you can consider taking the healthy part of that nerve. So the more proximal part of the nerve or the part that's closer to the spinal cord and transecting it and reassigning it essentially to another muscle. So the majority of these cases are for amputees where the targets, the normal targets for that nerve, meaning the skin and muscle, are no longer there, but it can be done in cases where patients are not amputees, but just have a nerve injury. So our philosophy on this, since this procedure has been around, is we prefer to do it acutely, meaning within the early time frame after an injury occurs, because you can run into a lot of problems if a person develops things like residual limb pain or phantom limb pain. And it can set up a process, even in the mind, that is some rewiring that occurs at a more central level, that once it gets set up, it can be challenging to overcome it. People can succumb to requiring medications, including opioids. And as we all know, those can have very significant and even devastating side effects, dependence, and all the other collateral problems that can result because of that. So our studies and our personal preference and philosophy has been to do TMR early on. And so to prevent that whole sequelae and that domino effect from taking place, the surgery is shown to work best in that acute setting, in a more chronic setting. So after an injury, after a surgery, after an amputation has been performed, we do have patients that come back, and it could be months later, could be years later. Surgery still can be done in those cases, but the results aren't overall quite as good. They can be quite effective. A number of cases, you're not going to be able to completely eliminate the symptoms. So the thing about doing it acutely versus in a chronic setting is about 25% of people who have a major limb amputation are not going to end up having a ton of nerve problems. So if you're doing it acutely, meaning in that early phase, 25% of people you're doing it on might never have needed the procedure. However, that other 75% are more likely going to do better if you do it early on. And if you have the opportunity when you're taking care of the residual limb, you're setting it up for prosthesis where you're going to set the patient up for success, for having a stable residual limb that does not have sensitive areas, doesn't develop things like neuromas, and you want to give them the ability to have intuitive control for a myoelectric prosthesis, then you can do the TMR early, get them set up, get them wired for success, and then allow them to move on. So that's been our philosophy on that.
So you talked about what it is. How did this come to be? What issue, or I guess this was a novel idea at some point, what was that trying to answer? Was there a gap somewhere that you felt this is going to be the answer and this is going to help us progress or provide something new or different for these patients?
Doctors Kaiken and Dumanian from Northwestern are the ones who are credited for developing the procedure. And it was a bit of a serendipitous discovery. The nerve surgery, the TMR, would have such positive effects on preventing neuroma formation and things like reducing phantom limb pain and residual limb pain. The initial impetus for it was to give a patient the ability to control a myoelectric prosthesis with the residual muscles that they had. So the first patient to ever have this procedure was a bilateral shoulder level amputee. When you think about a myoelectric prosthesis, the ability to control that is dependent on muscle contractions within the patient's residual limb. So in other words, for this particular patient, Jesse, really all he had to control the prosthesis, so to move his elbow up and down, open, close the hands on a myoelectric prosthesis, were his chest muscles. And so by taking the nerve endings that used to go to the hand and used to go to the elbow and rewiring them into different segments of the chest muscle, now you could get a connection that went from the patient's brain down through the spinal cord, down through those original pathways to control the hand, open and close, control the elbow, bending and straightening. And now those electrical impulses will cause muscles in the chest to contract in a very predictable pattern because now they've been rewired. And so that's information that can be used from the patient's own thought and the patient's own desire to trigger a sensor on the skin to pick up the signal and then transmit that to the prosthesis. So the original problem that was being addressed was for intuitive myoelectric control. And through a series of basic science studies in animals and in humans as well, it was found that doing this nerve reassignment surgery, or TMR, was a very effective way to give the nerves a purpose and to allow them to grow into a muscle instead of growing in out of control, disorganized fashion, which results in the formation of something called a neuroma. A neuroma is a ball of nerve that can be hypersensitive and really isn't useful to the patient. The patient's brain is still wired to think that they're supposed to be getting input from a limb that's no longer there. And so this, by rewiring it and moving that nerve into a different muscle, can really dampen or eliminate a lot of those symptoms.
Is there a certain level of amputation that has the best outcome, whether it's proximal, distal? What do you see as far as success rates?
Well, it can be very successful at proximal distal levels in the upper extremity and the lower extremity as well. So the more proximal you get, the bigger the nerves are. Overall, the more problems they can cause in general. So to use an extreme example, TMR is not typically for a fingertip level amputation because the rates of neuroma formation for a finger, the finger is amputated, are around on average about 7%. So oftentimes we're not going to do a sophisticated surgery for something that has a high probability of doing well with a simple procedure. But once you start getting up into the hand and into the forearm and up higher, the nerves really, again, have a very high rate of causing problems and leading to significant residual limb pain, phantom limb pain. And so once you get up to the wrist and higher, and the lower extremity, it's more or less at the ankle and higher, that's when you're really at high risk for developing those problems, and that's where we'll typically employ it.
What does the timeline look for these patients after they have this procedure as far as recovery and getting them into a prosthetic? What does that timeline look like? What can they expect?
Another advantage of doing the TMR acutely at the time the amputation is being carried out is that they can recover from everything all at once, as opposed to having the amputation, crossing your fingers, hoping that they don't develop a nerve problem. And then if they do, then going back and having to open things back up, do the dissection, raise up the soft tissues, et cetera. And then you get a lot of swelling from that, and then keep waiting on that before you can get a prosthesis on. And people really do best when they can get into a prosthesis sooner after amputation as possible. So a typical timeline for that, let's just say either it's a traumatic injury, or let's say it's somebody with cancer of a limb, or let's say it's somebody who's developed gangrene, like an infection, or they've lost blood supply to their limb. When you go in and do the amputation, we try to do as little additional dissection as possible, but at the same time allowing us to the major nerves. Typically, that's what we call mixed motor sensory nerves. So those that carry information that's both going to a muscle, but then also getting feedback from the skin, because those are the ones that in general have the highest rates of neuroma formation. Some of the quote-unquote sensory-only nerves that are fairly large, we also like to address those as well at the same time to try to minimize the risk for developing all these problems as we talked about. So usually the skin takes a couple weeks to heal. Swelling may take a couple months to come down. As soon as the skin allows it, we're pretty much putting pressure type stocking over the residual limb to try to compression garment that help reduce the swelling. And then as soon as the limb is really able to handle it, getting them fit into a prosthesis. And really in a lot of patients, as best as we're able to, in a lot of cases, we'll do something called an IPOP, which is an immediate post-op prosthesis. Those are extremely helpful, especially for patients that have bilateral upper extremity amputation, for example. And they're not fancy. They're fairly rudimentary, but it does allow the person to move and use their arms and do basic things for themselves. But it's also very important from keeping the brain from getting rewired, because the person still is thinking about doing things with both hands instead of really changing the way that the mind works and starting to think about the world doing everything with one hand. Because again, once that sets up, getting them retrained can be a challenge. It can be difficult. So, you know, our goal is to have a limb ready for a definitive prosthesis. And everyone's a little different. And of course, the details are critical. If you've had a big trauma to the limb, it may take longer for that swelling to go down to be at a stable volume where it can handle a prosthesis. But we like to get them in within 2 to 3 months. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. And then once they're in it, that whole time, if you've done the TMR surgery, then that's allowed the nerve that you've done TMR on to grow into the muscles that you targeted. And so once they grow in there and the axons, which are the endings of the nerve, are sprouting, they're going in and they're reactivating the muscle now with that new nerve that you reinnervated with, then you can start getting signals. So you can start seeing contraction of the muscle that's strong enough to generate electrical activity the surface electrode or skin sensor can pick up on. And then they can get in and use a prosthesis. So plenty of people that have TMR don't use myoelectric prosthetic necessarily, but it does give them that option. And it also just makes wearing any type of prosthesis, whether it's a silicone or a body-powered prosthesis, easier to use and don and wear, because that residual limb is less sensitive and is more stable overall. So it can tolerate the prosthetic wear. And again, the similar thoughts and philosophy on the lower extremities, trying to control myoelectrics is not quite as important in the lowers, simply because the lower extremity doesn't really have the same dexterity as the upper extremity. But in an ideal world, we're getting him into the IPOP initially. The limb volume is stabilizing over a couple of months. Those new electrical signals are being generated during that time frame. Then by somewhere in the 3 to 6 month range, they're able to, if they so desire and require it, put on a myoelectric and start wearing it and training it.
So at what point is occupational therapy or hand therapy initiated post-surgery? Is it immediate, or is there a healing process that happens prior to?
Well, we like to get the occupational therapist involved very early on. And I mentioned we have a dedicated multidisciplinary clinic, and one of our therapists, Marcy Siebert at Ortho Carolina, she's there with us in the clinic. So she's evaluating all the new amputees as well. In the early phase, it's things like wound care. It's things like edema control. It's things like making sure you have good range of motion of the residual joints. It's things like training and exercising the residual limb muscles so that they don't get disuse atrophy. We're very fortunate, again, you know, to have someone who's very proficient and knowledgeable about training for using these prosthetics. So one of the things we do a lot of is virtual training. So a person can put sensors on the residual limb, and once that electrical activity can be generated, even if their arm's not ready to handle a prosthesis yet, so still in that healing phase and the volume hasn't stabilized or equilibrated, they can be hooked up to even just an iPad where they can see a virtual limb on the screen and they can start working it and training it. And that has a lot of benefit in terms of just saying, wow, I can really do this even before they can see it. But there's a huge mental side of it too. It's just very encouraging to see that the future is ahead and that's what they're preparing for can be pretty uplifting and encouraging during that process. So we totally like to engage the OTs, CHTs early on in the process for all those reasons.
Would you say that this is predominantly y'all's and your group that y'all are predominantly doing this procedure for this patient population? Like it's changed the direction of your management of these patients?
Yeah, I would say yes, definitely. I think especially again for what we consider major limbs, so above the ankle, above the wrist, either doing this TMR surgery or another abbreviation and a different type of abbreviation, different management strategy called RPNI is another way that works quite well for preventing all these nerve problems down the road. So RPNI stands for regenerative peripheral nerve interface. So again, that's another mouthful, but essentially what it is if you take, let's just say it's a sensory nerve. So maybe like the radial sensory nerve in the forearm, and you've had an amputation at the forearm level. You leave it alone, it's got a high likelihood of developing into a neuroma and sensitive and can't put prosthesis on and on. Lots of phantom limb pain, meaning they're still feeling an area that's not there anymore, and pain at that site as well. So that one is not going to give you any myoelectric signal that's going to be useful for controlling the prosthesis. So you don't need to take a muscle that's in the residual limb, transfer it into it to try to generate a signal because it's just a sensory nerve. So it's really just connected to skin. So instead of doing TMR for a nerve like that, oftentimes what we'll do is this RPNI procedure. So creating a peripheral nerve interface with a muscle. So it's really interesting the way it works. This was developed by Dr. Sederna at the University of Michigan. So this technique, you take a free muscle graft, so you could take it from anywhere, but you denervate it. So it's about a 3x1x1 centimeter, so a little bigger than a postage stamp size free muscle graft. Free meaning there's no blood supply to it, and you've taken away the natural nerve innervation to it. And you take the end of that damaged nerve and you literally just sew it right into the center of that muscle graft. And then you take the edges of the muscle graft and wrap them around to create a sphere, essentially around the end of the nerve, so that when the nerve tries to regenerate and it has those axons, the endings of the nerve that are trying to sprout out, it's going to find something. It's going to find something in every direction. And you're not going to have any axon that can sneak away and start causing problems because it's going to grow into muscle somewhere around it. And what's really neat about this and cool about it is that free muscle graft can survive within the body essentially by the nutrition that's around it, the blood supply that is in the surrounding tissues. It will cause new blood vessels to grow from different directions. It keeps it alive, especially if you keep it at that critical size that I mentioned. So that can be another really effective strategy and means for preventing all these nerve-related problems. So I would say pretty much for almost any patient, really at this point in time, who is medically stable enough and is cognitively stable and able to participate in rehabilitation and demonstrates any potential ability to wear a prosthesis, that we're really doing a combination of usually of TMR and RPNI for those patients. So it has been a paradigm shift in that regard that we really prefer to do one of those two procedures, which we call them as a category, an active nerve management strategy, as opposed to the traditional, which was something called a traction neurectomy, which is basically pull on the nerve, cut it as high as you can, hope it retracts back up into the limb and you don't hear from it again. No matter where you cut the nerve, it is going to try to regenerate. And when it does, there's a high probability that it's going to form one of these neuromas. And again, the majority of those do cause problems. So if you can get ahead of that, you can really help somebody.
Are there any patients that this is not a go-to for? That you, if a patient showed up in your clinic, you would say, we need to go a different route that they would not be an ideal candidate for?
That's a great question. Honestly, it's a little bit of an unanswered one. So I can tell you where we stand at this point in time based on all the literature that's available and personal experience. I think it comes up most frequently with people who are pretty far removed from their original amputation and injury. And the question is, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of these central pathways can get set up within the brain, and there can be problems with the nerve that aren't necessarily attributable to a neuroma. And so we try to really be careful about identifying whether the problem that the patient is having is because of a nerve. The way we do that is a few ways we do it. One is with imaging. So let's just say, I'm just going to give an example of this. Somebody had arm level amputation 5 years ago. They kind of have burning all over their arm, burning type sensation, electrical shocks, sounds very much like nerve pain. But we need to know, is it just one nerve? Because if it's truly just one nerve, then it should be focal. You know, there should be a, what we call a hot spot on the arm, a very sensitive, finite area in the arm. Tapping on that area oftentimes will produce symptoms in the distribution of where that nerve used to go. So you can ask the patient, do you feel it on your palm side, like your median nerve distribution? Do you feel it in the ulnar nerve side, like the small finger? Areas at the back of the hand and radial sensory distribution. Make sure that all matches up. And then, as I was saying, with imaging using MRI, ultrasound, for example, we can look at that focal area if it exists and see if there is indeed a nerve ball there. That gives us a bit more confidence that if we were to go in and intervene, then it's likely to help the patient. If the patient has something like, I'll give an example of like complex regional pain syndrome. So there's clearly nerve-related symptoms, but it's more of a diffuse problem. Then in the limited number of cases that have been described using TMR for CRPS, for example, it doesn't seem to be anywhere near as predictable. So you got to be really careful with that. And so I think that situation where we really try to tease it out. The easy ones are the ones where they say it hurts right here. You tap that area. It gives them those symptoms. It goes in the same distribution as where the nerve used to go. You do an MRI and ultrasound. You see a big nerve ball there. Let's say you even do a diagnostic injection, which we use in some of these cases. We inject local anesthetic in that area, maybe a little steroid around with it as well, and see if that helps with the symptoms, at least temporarily. And if it does, then it gives you a good feeling from a prognostic standpoint that taking care of that neuroma, getting that out, doing TMR, RPNI to it is most likely to take care of all the symptoms. But if we see pain diagram and it pretty much shows person's got the entire limb is on fire, it's every part, it's not a focal area, then that's where we say, wow, this surgery cannot cure all nerve problems. So that's where we may be more reluctant to sort of offer it, is I would say most commonly in that setting. And I'll give you another example, seeing somebody who has pain in a non-anatomic distribution that we would think about doing a nerve surgery on that without knowing exactly what you're going after. If it doesn't really match up, it doesn't really make sense why they would be having that, then I would hold off and be cautious about it.
You mentioned CRPS. Do you have a lot of success in treating CRPS with this approach?
CRPS is a very difficult problem. There are, at times, there are nerve type of procedures. You know, I'll give an example. Sometimes something like a carpal tunnel release, sometimes a neurolysis, an area where a specific nerve has been injured, can improve the symptoms. But again, it's a pretty limited number of patients in the literature to draw on. But TMR has really not been anywhere near as successful when CRPS is the indication as it has been in these other types of indications or reasons to perform the procedure. I think it has to do with, again, the nerve not being normal at the level where the nerve is cut. And then some of the more central processes, you know, that involve the central nervous system, which you can't even imagine that you would be able to really address those simply by doing something down in the arm or the leg. There are desperate situations where I think it can be considered. You know, if you don't have too much to lose, Pearson's had a million other things and they're really debilitated by it. But it's one that we tread lightly. We're very judicious and careful about offering or recommending it for that, for all those reasons.
I suspected that, but I just wanted to ask, because on our end, we're like, oh, what do we do with these patients that have CRPS? Because sometimes it is a long road and with little change in status. So I just thought maybe I'd ask.
It's really tough. There are cases where you have, you know, nerve injuries, you have brachial plexus injury, for example, or multiple peripheral nerve injuries. You've got a swollen hand, you've got no function in the hand, you've got a hand that changes colors all the time, a hand that has a lot of temperature insensitivity, insensate hand, that is not helping somebody. And so there are cases where we've done amputation, and as part of that, we'll do an active nerve management strategy like TMR, RPNI with it. But it's always with the caveat that this is really being done to improve your function. In other words, your hand, and it's a lot of times the patient's coming and asking for it. The hand is essentially not helping somebody at all, and a prosthetic could. So they could have some control with a prosthetic, again, if it's body powered or a myoelectric prosthetic. But we never want to do it just for the pain, because again, it's very unpredictable. Even if you get above the level of where it looks like they have all those terrific changes in the limb, it still can result in continued pain symptoms in the residual limb.
Well, and you're introducing another procedure, and with that come post-op concerns, and I think you can get into a cycle with those patients.
Absolutely. So like I said, I mean, it's a very rare indication to do it. And it's, again, with a lot of preoperative counseling before considering that. I love TMR, RPNI as weapons in our arsenal or tools in our tool bag in terms of giving us different options or ways to treat. But I don't feel that either one of them is a panacea. In other words, it's not a cure-all thing. So you just have to be careful. And you have to have long, detailed conversations with patients about risks and potential benefits. And it's a growing body of literature because the procedures haven't been around forever. So there's certainly been some uncertainty over the course of my career, and things have crystallized to some extent as time has gone on. We don't have definitive answers for everything. We continue to gather a lot of data, publish and read the research that's available from different centers across the country to help us in providing guidelines and recommendations for patients.
So those first patients that you tried these techniques on, I'm sure they're several years out now. Do you ever see them years after to see how they're doing and how they're maintaining their function? Are they still using their prosthesis? I know sometimes upper extremity prosthesis can be difficult to actually get the patients to follow through with using. But if they have that good function and that ability to work their prosthesis a little bit easier without all the complications of nerve pain, are you seeing them continuing to use these prostheses years after?
Yes, that is a great question. And we did our first transhumeral level amputation with TMR about 10 years ago. And so I could tell you the girl's name. I could tell you exactly how her injury was. She invited us to her wedding years later. She went back. She was an equestrian young girl. And she did phenomenal with the TMR in terms of knocking out phantom limb pain and having very limited residual limb pain. She was able to get into a myoelectric prosthesis. We've subsequently done that, these types of surgeries for many, 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 many patients over several years. And we do get long-term follow-up. We have patients that are actively involved in our multidisciplinary clinic, we have patients that come essentially for that peer support that I mentioned. So they're not even there for any medical reason at all. They don't even have an appointment, but they come because they want to help somebody else who's been through the process. And so we know exactly how they're doing. We hold social events for the patients as well. We just had one about a month ago where people seemingly came out of the woodworks. We hadn't seen in a year or two, and everybody's wearing their arms and trading practical advice and just catching up. And when we looked even at forearm level for patients we had done TMR on, at over a year out, we had more than 75% in myoelectric prosthetic, which is a super high number. And if you compare it to the literature, it's just way higher than the baseline that's out there. But the beauty of doing the surgery again is whether they end up using a body-powered prosthesis or a myoelectric prosthesis or no prosthesis, if you can stave off all the pain symptoms that can come along with this and prevent them from having to take medications on a daily basis and allow them to get on with things, you've helped them out tremendously. So it's a little bit across the board in terms of what a person's interest is, what their occupations are and activity levels, what type of prosthesis they'll use, what type of terminal end devices they'll have for their different hobbies, if it's swimming, if it's fishing, if it's hunting. We're here in the South, so the fishing and hunting is something I had to learn about, but it's very important to some of our patients. Weed eating is another big one that our patients just absolutely love to do. I'm not quite sure why it's so important, but they absolutely love it. So we're constantly talking about how they use their prosthesis so they can use their weed eater again. And you see a lot of people utilizing in different ways. And so it's really cool. But I think one of the keys, again, is just trying to engage early on, get everything set up, get them a very prompt referral to a prosthetist, to the appropriate therapist. And then we really bring the patients back. We bring them back for a long time. So that's not kind of the tradition and the way that I was trained and the way orthopedic surgery or plastic surgery may traditionally be carried out. But we like to see patients back for years after these just to check in on them. And it's a little bit of learning from them because there's not a ton of, there wasn't at least when I was going through the training, not only did the surgeries not exist, but the technologies have evolved as well. And people require maintenance and they need new devices and they want to know what's the latest and greatest, et cetera. So it is really cool to have the longitudinal relationships and see what people use and how they use it over time.
It's amazing to see the transition of progress over the past several years. I've been in therapy for a long time. And from my first upper extremity amputation of the old school upper extremity prosthesis, they've changed so much since that time. So these developments are fantastic. And I'm glad to see that things are progressing and cutting edge. It's great.
So I have a few part question. So one, I know you said that it seems like this isn't done everywhere. It's still somewhat newer. Do you have patients that travel in from all over the country for this procedure? If that is the case, are they going and receiving their prosthetic care and their therapy care across the country? And how do you collaborate with clinicians across the country to care for these patients?
I think that as a surgical field, the interest and skill in doing these surgeries has increased quite a bit over the last few years. If you go to our national meetings and society meetings, for example, there's always going to be symposia, lectures, courses on this stuff. And same way that my partner, Glenn Gaston, and I got interested in doing TMR and setting up a clinic here dedicated to the care of amputees, there's a lot of other surgeons around the country with similar interests. A lot of them have come and spent time with us. We've been able to show them what we do, give them a primer, an overview of how to do TMR from shoulder down to the hand and how to take care of these patients. So there's more and more places springing up around the country, but it is a highly specialized level of care And so not everyone everywhere has a clinic that they can go to like that. So yeah, we do have a lot of travelers. We have travelers from all over the country that will come and visit. And the way we usually do that is we've got an email address, essentially, that's just amputee@orthocarolina.com. And through the website or through the email, people will reach out and say, hey, seen this, that, or the other. This is an interesting thing, but we can't provide medical care or advice outside of states where we have a license. So we'll carry on an educational conference with them, which will be a virtual setting, and see what's going on with them and see if it's worth making the trip or if we can help identify someone closer to them that can get them taken care of. And then following that, they may come, you know, for evaluation. They may come, they may have surgery. If we can engage people that are close to them who may not be the ones doing the surgery, but understand the importance of it and say, hey, you just got more experience with this, it's better off in your hands, then that's a formula that works well. You know, and a lot of times we'll have surgeons reaching out to us and saying, hey, I've got somebody, I think they're really better off coming to Charlotte. Would you mind evaluating him, taking care of him, et cetera? I'm happy to do all the follow-up care and make sure that they have, you know, the prescriptions they need, that they can see our therapist, they can plug in with our prosthetics group locally. Those are all ways that it can work for somebody who wants to travelize for that highly specialized care. And then some of the prosthetists we work with travel quite a bit as well. So if we get the patient taken care of and communicate what's been done and what the plan is, then they can get a lot of their care from either someone who's traveling, who's really highly specialized and has that level of expertise. And it's oftentimes in conjunction with somebody local who's a person's go-to person for it. So that's how we've been able to navigate that and set that up.
Carrie, do you have any more questions? I think we kind of hit everything.
Yeah, it's very fascinating. And I think it seems to be such a great procedure for these patients and sounds like could be pretty life-changing to affect their pain, to allow them to be functional. So we appreciate y'all using the science, using the technology to do this, to have a great impact on these patients.
Absolutely. Like I said, when this came around and we decided to embrace it, start doing it, we were really impressed with the outcomes that we were able to get. And then just developing more and more interest and expertise in it over years. And it's been a privilege. It's really an honor to take care of these patients who have lost so much. And many of them just are so grateful and they just have a wonderful attitude and they're so resilient. So it's a very special patient population. And again, with creating the clinic and environment we have, we tell them pretty much from day one that you're part of the family now. We'll be knowing each other for quite a while here as we help them through the entire process, if not just doing the surgery, but making sure that everything follows through for their betterment as time goes on.
Well, thanks for sharing this with us.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed discussing with it. You guys ask great questions. This is really, again, it's an exciting field because there's always changes on the horizon, both on the surgical side and the technology side. There's a lot more to come. We're doing a lot of really interesting work where we are. We think we're going to have even more potential solutions out there for managing pain outside of surgical options as well. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, we'll be looking for it. Thank you.
Cool. All right, ladies, well, have a great evening. And again, thanks for having me.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of Hands in Motion, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. You can listen on the ASHT website and or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, including Apple, Google, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Once subscribed, please rate and review the podcast to help us reach new listeners and to continue offering valuable, relevant content.
You've been listening to Hands in Motion, brought to you by the American Society of Hand Therapists. To learn more about ASHT and to subscribe to the show, please visit ASHT.org. We'll see you next time on the Hands in Motion podcast.